Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of 8 cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
You're tuned in to The Show on the Road, a new podcast where I interview songwriters, band leaders, and musicians from around the world. My name is Zach Lupitin. This week on the show, a very special conversation with the founding trio of one of the most respected and sought-after folk rock bands in the country, known for their hedonistically heavenly harmonies that have lifted them from playing tiny bars around their founding home base of Brooklyn to adoring audiences at Red Rocks, the Apollo, and the Ryman in their new home of Nashville, the Lone Bellow. They say there's nothing like sibling harmony, and that there's something in the blood that binds voices together in a way that creates a sonic architecture that can build castles in the sky with just the joining of sisters in song. But maybe there's something even spookier when three people from totally different families in the South find each other in a diner in the city that never sleeps, and find that when they put their voices together, it's something more than family. It's like a lightning strike from an unknown god that even they didn't know they summoned. One of the things that I keep feeling as I play music year after year is that athletes and great musicians are connected in a way that maybe they don't realize. Baseball players in particular, they play 162 days a year. Just like most of the bands I talk to, they tour about 150, 160 days a year. And every single night in a different city, they have to perform at peak performance. And even their peak performance from the greatest players like Mike Trout or Jose Altuve, they fail two-thirds of the time. And yet, they have to retain their passion and their love of the game. Let's look at the Lone Bellow as a different type of team. Each night they have to go perform in a different circumstance with different sound constraints, different crowds, different vibes. Maybe they're not feeling well, maybe their van broke down, but they still have to perform and blend their voices perfectly, or the whole thing falls apart. Unlike the best baseball players, who are very highly paid, the Lone Bellow cannot go on a prolonged slump. If their harmonies start to fall apart, they do not get booked at the Ryman, or at Red Rocks, or at the Apollo. It all goes away. I've seen them in loud festival grounds, I've seen them in hushed halls, and their consistency under pressure, the blending of their voices, it's so consistently great that it's like if Babe Ruth and Aretha Franklin teamed up and created some sort of three-headed monster. You know what? I would like to see the Lone Bellow sing the national anthem at the World Series. I'm just going to put that out there. Anyway, normally, I would never expect a band to accept a 9 a.m. Monday taping. But I was so glad to be able to meet up with Zach, Brian, and Kaneen around Brian's dining room table in Nashville after they dropped their kids off for school, and one thing was immediately clear. After melding their spirits together for 3 albums and a new one on the way, these guys have a rapport that is so intimate and so intertwined and so hilarious, and when it calls for it, so deadly serious and so full of heart and genuine insight that I found myself smiling and leaning closer to hear every word they were saying. I was sworn to secrecy to not release this episode until they said it themselves, but this is the first place they actually talked about their highly anticipated new record, Half Moon Light, captained by the multi-instrumentalist and producer Aaron Dessner of The National and some of the finest assassins slicing their way through Americana right now. I'm really excited for this new record. And while we had a little too much fun going down rabbit holes of embarrassing touring moments and celebrity crushes, I urge you to stick around to the end of the episode where they dive into what has inspired this new record, and how hearing a mother separated from her daughter at the border tell her story helped them tell their own. And while Zach, Brian, and Kanine have written so many beautiful original songs through the years, it's actually a cover that they did recently that cuts to the heart of where they are right now. It's their reverential, spooky version of For What It's Worth, the Buffalo Springfield classic. It's maybe one of the only rock and roll songs that you know exactly what it is from the first octaves hit on the guitar. And then the narrator says, "There's something happening here, and what it is ain't exactly clear." For the lone bellow, maybe the questioning, the searching is the most important part. We don't know what's happening, but we're not okay not asking the question. All philosophizing aside, I'm an outright huge fan of these guys. I was super honored that they let me talk to them in Nashville. And you know what? I'll admit to you right now, when I hold my arm in the air and I try to hold a long note like a preacher trying to summon his flock, I stole that from Zach Williams. I saw him doing that. I needed to do it too. I'll admit it right now. But enough of that. Let's talk to him right now. Here they are, the Lone Bellow.
What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware.
Everyone gather around and tell the radio audience who you are and why you are and what you are.
Why you are. I'm Brian.
I'm Kanine.
I'm Zach with an H, the only correct way to spell it.
Amen.
Z-A-C-K.
I'm from Ackworth, Georgia, which is a beautiful town with a great... We had one of the original Cracker Barrels. Close to...
He's really good at giant checkers.
Yeah.
Did you grow up with guns in the house in Georgia?
Yeah. I grew up with... I remember one time I found my grandpa's sawed-off shotgun in the attic with my cousin Ben. Mm. And it was scary. But you could, like, you know, throw it up like that, like the movies. Mm. And I think back on that, and I'm like, that was not safe.
Yeah, all of our guns were, like, in my parents' closet. I used to go look at them and hold them.
So bad. The 80s, they were just like, well, we taught them right, so they're not going to go, like, snooping around while we're...
to pay attention to kids?
My buddy has this thing. He's, like, a super mountain man, crazy guy. Anyways, he has this thing. It's this box, and only his thumbprint can open the box, and that's where the gun is.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's supposed to be this, the new smart gun thing.
It's like, Siri, load my weapon.
Shoot that intruder for me.
I'm tired. I don't want to get
not
up.
Like, not,
I'm watching Gaffieri.
Disable him.
And put on that NPR podcast.
You guys all have kids, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Who had kids first?
Me.
Way ahead.
You married early.
Super early. Too early. Yes.
How old were you?
22.
Oh. I was 23. But
you were smarter.
Getting married at 22 feels impossible to me.
What's crazy in my town?
It kind of is impossible for you.
Now, in my town, at 21,
people start looking at you funny.
Hey,
yeah,
yeah.
Oh my!
You bathe
still?
Because you're not married yet. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I haven't lived there since I was like 18, but probably.
Yeah, my dad is from Boston. When I told him I wanted to get married, he was like, "You are too young." But, and I'm from Virginia. Grew up there.
Where in Virginia?
Fredericksburg. Hmm. So if you ever want to go see some more
Civil War fun,
American history,
probably find a musket.
Yeah, you can definitely find a musket. Yeah,
has anyone been held up by gunpoint in this band?
I have. We were out in New York. We were celebrating something. I can't remember. But I remember because I took the cab home with Zach and his wife, Stacy, and they dropped me off on my block. And I was like thinking outside and I was smoking a cigarette. And I was like, that was such a good time. Because we had hung out on a roof and we were like, and I was like, man, I love New York. This is such a good time. And I wasn't even paying attention. And I was inebriated too. But I was like smoking a cigarette and all of a sudden, like, bam, right in the back of my head, just knocked me out.
Oh, man.
Like, I saw that. They grabbed my stuff, like my phone and everything. And I was kind of like doing that, and with alcohol, I was like so like loopy.
Yeah.
So I like talked to a cop for a second. I was like, I can't really do this right now. So I like went back and went to bed and then got up and went to the precinct in the morning. But he had ended up doing that to like 3 or 4 different people. And
Dang.
Yeah, but it was 2 guys.
Is that why you only have a flip phone today?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't want a flip phone. I just don't want, you know, people watching me and knowing where I'm going all the time.
He has an iPad that he alternates the flip phone with.
No, I don't know. I just don't like having a screen on my hand all the time. But I'm not on a high horse about it.
Dude, what if it was like a Park Slope mom?
I'm going around and knocking people out.
She's just real pissed off.
She's like, I did yoga today.
I got so much kale, I don't know what to do.
You guys formed in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. Hard Knocks of Park Slope.
And that was what?
No, 2000, so many strollers.
2012-ish?
2010.
10?
Last month of 2010 was our first month of as a band.
Well, what was the first show?
Rockwood? It was either the Brooklyn Pharmacy, where Canine...
Show is like a loose...
That wasn't a show.
If you mean we sang together...
You were serving ice cream during the show.
While I was working.
That's true.
I had 100 jobs.
That's true.
Where were you working?
My first job in New York was at the Brooklyn Pharmacy and Soda Fountain in Carroll Gardens. Because I actually had soda jerk experience before moving to New York, so I was a shoo-in.
Well, then maybe it was
you had like a resume.
I was like, yeah, I know how to do this, and they're like,
maybe
come
it was
in.
Roots Cafe. Remember that one?
Roots.
I don't think I was at that one.
I think our first real show was actually
Rockwood.
We played at Rockwood, but the first whole show was that one at Bowery.
Whoa!
Oh,
that
yeah.
was our first real.
You
show.
You sure it wasn't when we opened for Civil Wars in Philly?
Oh, well,
oh,
take
no,
that.
That
yeah,
was
okay.
It.
I think
it's a pretty good first show.
Yeah. So they were just getting going.
Yeah.
And Nate and Joy Williams needed a place to stay. And we had like a mutual friend. I was like, they can stay with us. And they stayed with us. And I was like, hey, our band wants to open for you someday.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know they were a 2-piece duet. Emotional 2-piece duet, and we came in guns blazing with like
7 pieces,
7 or 8.
We had a steel guitar player.
We had so many.
I remember John Paul White after the set. He just came up to Brian and was just like, "I'm gonna bury you," and I was like, "I love that."
He's from Alabama. He
like
likes,
out of,
he likes some
out of
good,
love or out of like
out of love.
Anger.
He likes some good
just
competition.
Like good competition.
Okay.
Just like
dude.
They will forget about you now.
We tried to melt the paint off the walls, and then they were like,
Yeah. Well, we would play Rockwood Stage 1, and the drummer would be in the audience on the floor.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Even on Stage 2, there was always...
And they had the grand piano on Stage 1, right, which was most of the stage.
Right.
And it was just a smorgasbord.
Well, you recorded your first record, the self-titled one, at Rockwood, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ken Rockwood was kind of like a mentor of mine, and... He had a label with Atlantic, and he tried to sign me to it, and the like powers that be didn't want anything to do with it. And we recorded one time at Avatar, which was this epic studio in Manhattan. I don't think it's around anymore. And then, yeah, when we came around to do Alone Bellow, he shut his venue down for 3 days and three nights.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Rockwood has, like, how many bands a night? Like, 30?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big deal that he gave us that place. It was amazing. And we made it. This guy, Charlie Peacock, from here, from Nashville, brought all of his gear up and made it a studio.
Huh.
Yeah, Richie Biggs engineered.
Yeah.
Did the whole thing in a round. Banjo player in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
That was Jason.
Yeah.
My husband played banjo behind the bar.
And your husband plays bass with the full band, right?
And keys. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. He plays it all.
It was funny because when I saw that you guys earlier this year, I think, stripped back to the trio, so you had to like lay off your own husband. Like, well, how did that conversation go? Or he was fine with, he was home with the kids.
Yeah, he was cool. He like, he doesn't like performing, I would say, as much as we do.
Okay. Is he more of an introvert?
Yeah, for sure. No, it was a different kind of time, but it was a good like change of rhythm, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He got to chill at home with our son, and yeah.
I think the last time we played with you was in some ski town.
Mm.
And you were very pregnant.
I love that phrase.
But like the guitar was resting on.
Oh yeah,
your
I had
belly,
to do
like
I had
vertical.
To do a lot of
it like
side playing. Yeah,
like, it looked like you were playing dobro.
I know, she had a little John Prine vibe going there for a minute.
In spite of our shit. Yeah, it was really comfortable.
Did you, how long did you go until you had to actually stop?
I think our last show was, I was 38 weeks pregnant. It was like full term for sure.
was that Jazz Fest?
Yeah, I think the last show we played was New Orleans Jazz Fest.
I mean, you got to play that show.
Yeah, right.
But man, I was like struggling. And
I remember looking over at you and I was like, that girl's killing. I couldn't believe like she was pregnant, like about to have a baby, and just like
it was
just
crazy.
Blowing it out of the water. It was so awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy.
From my perspective.
After the set, Snoop Dogg was playing, so like
it's a natural progression.
Waddled over to Snoop's set. And he was just like, so what, we get drunk, so what, we smoke weed. And I was just like sitting there. I was standing there with my like enormous pregnant belly and just being like, I don't think I should be here right now.
Stevie Wonder also played. He was wholesome.
He was great.
He was wholesome.
One of the questions I was going to ask you is, what would be the most unconventional but amazing tour pairing?
Mm.
Lone Bellow and Snoop Dogg, or...
I mean, I would love to do Lone Bellow and Boyz II Men. I'd love to open for Boyz II Men.
Let it happen.
That would make sense.
I think, but unconventional, it would have to be like, I don't know, maybe, Imagine Dragons.
Mm. Dang.
Just kidding.
Third Eye Blind.
Eagle Eye Cherry.
Creed.
Oh, save
That'd
tonight.
Be cool.
Dude, it had to be like, I'd like to go out with Nas or like, what, Chance the Rapper or something, but they probably wouldn't let us. We would be his choir, though. I'd go for it.
Yeah, we would help any way we can.
Any way.
You could do Kanye, and then you could be the choir at his weird church services.
Mm. Oh, the Sunday service?
Does he have weird church services?
Oh.
You haven't seen that?
It's on,
I just thought
it's
he
on Instagram.
Did it one
it's
time
very weird.
At not Bonnaroo, but at Coachella. He does it all the time.
It's like a whole thing, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys opened for Eric Church in like arenas, right?
Yeah.
Was that weird or was that awesome?
That was a flop.
It was not.
It was a mismatch.
Eric Church is
he is very awesome.
So kind.
His crowd would yell.
They didn't enjoy
while we were
music.
Playing. Can we please hear Eric Church?
Eric.
But like, that's what I don't get is that people, at least there's some reviews that were like, they're really bringing this heart and soul to country music. I was like, huh, are Lone Bellow country music?
Yeah, whatever
hey,
they want
to teach his own, man. I don't know.
I love
who
country
knows?
Music.
Siri, tell us.
Get my gun and tell me.
Well, if like you have a vaguely southern accent, are you country music?
I know,
and
right?
You have an acoustic guitar? I don't know.
I don't know. We wore a lot of vests when we first came out the gate. I think that may have thrown
very dust bowl.
Thrown people like we off. Were mining coal.
I was.
We like we were bringing back coal.
If you get like one of those 10 types of bran, he looks straight up like he just wandered out of a coal mine.
Yeah, I love it.
I was just looking at that picture of you from the Danish festival after we were like really jet lagged, and then he's like, "Let me take intense close-ups."
Dude, I love that picture. Man. I look like I'm. Like,
is that Tuna Fest?
Yeah,
that's where I celebrated David Ramirez's birthday all night, and then we took those photos.
You look like you did.
And then I posted one of the photos as a joke because my face was so swollen, and my dad commented, "Time to turn the corner."
He's like, "Do you need to come home, son?"
If our younger band or a younger artist like would ask me like for any sort of advice, I think one of the things I would tell them would be make sure when you're starting out that your clothing choices and or like your picture choices won't be super weird and embarrassing 10 years later. Like like something that maybe stands the test of time more. Because like I feel like, especially in L.A., 2008, 2009, when we were getting going, like, the speakeasy vibe was in. So I'm wearing, like, a boater hat, and, like, there was a lot of suspenders, which everyone was doing. But
hats really...
But it's just, like,
really
it looks bad. It looks like you're playing, like, Halloween,
well,
like,
one of your
on
band
the Mississippi
members
River.
Also probably had, like, one really deep V. And you were like, "Brian, please.
Don't.
That's not. No, Brian with a Y.
Oh, nice.
Please don't wear the deep V. That's not what we're going for."
Can see a lot of your pecs.
Is there something from your past, either songs or history, that is embarrassing to you now?
Yeah. There's a couple off the first record where I'm just like, "Yo, that was... writing a song about a dream about dogs writing notes to me." And I just slip those lyrics in. Now I sing that song every night.
And it's very earnest.
We've had some very embarrassing moments. One of my favorites, when we, in Chicago, we opened for Robert Plant.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian accidentally almost pulled Patty Griffin's chair out from underneath her.
Yeah.
And that
she's a very
was,
tiny lady.
That was a moment. That was like, I froze.
Yeah, one of my favorite moments from that night, and embarrassing, was we all watched Robert Plant, and Robert Plant, before the show, came up and introduced himself, and like a tear just dropped from my eye. But later, he was like, "Bring me your CD," you know, like, while we're there. And we're like, we're just starting to, like, play these kind of shows. I'm like, it's crazy. Absolutely, I'm going to give you a CD. So he played a show and everything, and they locked us out of the green room afterwards. Like, get out, get your, get everything. And I was like, no, I'm gonna... So I broke into the green room to hand him a CD. And when I got in there, he was, like, shirtless behind, like, just trying to dry off, and I just froze. Just froze right in front of him, like with the CD held out like this.
And then many tears started to fall.
And he grabbed the CD, and he was like, and then two bouncers grabbed me. Like, he was like, "Thank you." And then the bouncers just threw me out of there. But I gave a CD to Robert Plant.
You think he listened to it?
Probably not.
Right now, yeah. No. It's just like the one CD that's stuck in his car. He listens to it every day, and he can't remember the name of the band.
He doesn't know how to take the CD out of it.
Yeah.
What was your most starstruck moment?
Ooh. We've had some funny moments. I kind of want to stay on embarrassing longer.
keep going, please.
Do you have an embarrassing Star Trek
moment? Remember the capo? Your capo moment?
That's like old.
That's kind of like Star Trek and embarrassing.
Okay, all right. So
it was like 2006, and I was playing shows at Rockwood all the time, and I forgot my capo, and this brown-haired lady that sounded just like Norah Jones was singing, and I was like,
hey. At Rockwood?
At Rockwood.
Wow.
And I wanted to be like, hey, you're like really doing the Norah Jones thing hard. And I went up and asked if I could borrow her capo, and she was like, yeah, sure. And then Ken Rockwood was like, hey, that's Norah Jones.
Give her
She's
capo
in
back.
A wig, and don't be stupid. And
she was playing guitar?
Yeah, it was when she was learning how to play like electric, and she had this like secret band she was doing in New York. It was really fun.
It was before the Little Willies thing?
I remember going to a show that she played.
There's a name.
It was called
Little Willies is a thing.
Yeah, she had like this honky tongue. She put a couple albums.
That's
out.
Right.
They're amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
They called it Fang Banger.
Yeah, something like that.
I remember that. I was like,
lost
ooh.
To the dustbin of history.
Anyways, and then we played the Apollo a few months ago. For Mavis Staples' birthday, and she was there, and I was like, hey, remember this one time? And I like, told the capo story. Halfway through the story, I lose her completely. She's just like, and then later on that night, I was like, hey, can I take a picture with you? You remember I'm the capo guy? And she was just like, not unless you have a capo. And I was like, I mean, it's upstairs. Really? She was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, that's ice cold. Yeah. So now I know she's listening, so next time.
2006 was a long time ago. Yeah. She, you know, she maybe didn't remember.
Absolutely.
We also met David Byrne that night.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. That was great. We crossed the street with David Byrne.
I was really cool with him.
I was not.
And then I was like, I was really proud of how cool I was. I'm such a huge Talking Heads David Byrne fan. And I was like, told him, like, we were at a festival together, and I told him how much, like, his show is inspiring. And I just walked out and, like, called my best friend, and like, we're both huge fans, like, here in Nashville. And I'm like, I just freaking talked to David Byrne, and I was cool.
Ooh, I know my Star Trek moment. It was from, like, one of the first radio conferences we played. It was in New York. We're all, like, scared out of our minds.
This is awesome.
And we go to, like, some random nondescript building and random room. We're waiting to play for all these, like, radio programmers. And there is this, like, outrageously handsome man wearing, like, a three-piece suit.
And it was Meatloaf.
It was Meatloaf. Just chilling in the green room, and he starts singing. And we were like, you guys, that's Joe. From, like, I wanna know what turns you on. Which, if you're from, like, our era of music, I mean.
But it wasn't just him.
It wasn't just him. Also, so he was sitting there. And then a woman walks in, also outrageously beautiful, and he was like, hey, Eve, what's up? And I was like, oh, my God, Joe and Eve are in our dressing room.
Well, and wasn't that the same day Ja Rule had just gotten out of jail?
Was that the same day?
I think so. Oh, and we did an interview later on that day, and they put him in this, like, little grandpa sweater, and they were just like, here, go.
Oh, yeah, we were on, like, a morning show. And
yeah,
he was
totally inappropriate.
But yeah, it was like a triple whammy all in one day.
Dude, what a day.
And then he threw that festival, which was hard. That was a hard, hard pill to swallow.
It's hard when you're a close personal friend, you know, just like does something like that.
I remember one time
Ashton
Kutcher came to one of our shows and invited us back to his house. Mm. We were like, yeah, that 70s show, absolutely. And Brian decided that he wanted to swim in the... It wasn't a lake. It was...
The reservoir. There was mini gates to it.
Where was this?
I've been drinking.
In Ashton Kutcher's backyard. And he had been drinking a lot. And he was like, I want to go swim in that lake. And Ashton was like,
well, there's a big fence. You got to hop to get over it. I guess you can.
It's also the drinking water for most of LA.
I know. And we're all just like quietly hanging in his backyard around a fire. And he's like, I want to go swim in the reservoir. So he takes off running. And he, I guess there was like a little gate like this big that you just open the fence. And then the real fence was there. Well, Brian tried to hop that first gate, ripped his pants in half. Came back like completely just real
crestfallen.
Yeah.
And they were his only pants that he'd brought to play Jay Leno the next night, so he used electrical tape and taped them back together.
Yeah, we had to find black electrical tape and just hope it wasn't too shiny.
You didn't bring nice pants for Jay Leno?
No. No, not for Jay Leno. He was going off air. Everybody we played in the beginning are now gone. I think we were like the nail in the coffin.
They were like, I'm retiring now.
David Letterman was like just boring God.
We can't do this podcast without mentioning that you will be having a new record coming out next year.
Yes.
Do you have a title?
Yeah. It's called Half Moonlight. And that's the very first time I've said it.
Wow.
Out loud.
How did it feel?
So excited.
Good.
Okay.
It was 6 months in the making, and we turned in the masters 3 days ago. So we are like...
Who produced?
Aaron Desner. We wanted to go back and make a record with somebody that we had really connected with and made a record with before.
Mm.
And he was kind of like family. So yeah, we went back up.
Did you do it here or
No, we did it up in New York. He has this studio out on this property... where Ichabod Crane's character's from. And we started in the middle of the winter, and it was like really scary at night. And you slept upstairs in the studio, and it was like...
We watched Sleepy Hollow one night.
It was spooky. It was...
The Christopher Walken one.
That
kind of
stuff didn't scare me, but it was super spooky.
Yeah. It was great.
But we got to... I don't know. I think we have always kind of wanted to do a record like this, and we just like went for it. Like everybody that we like respect. And we just like, we like the way you play this instrument. Will you play on this? Mm. And it was like
who'd you bring in?
Pull the gamut. I mean,
Josh Kaufman, JT Bates,
Phil Cook. Aaron played a lot on it.
Dove Man,
Thomas Bartlett.
Yeah.
So many just awesome creators. Mm. And there's a whole, like, Aaron is like the center of this creative universe that we're, have a privilege to be a part of. So I mean, we just went to town.
You know when the first single's coming out? Is it a couple weeks or something?
We just found
it's
out.
It's in October, right?
Yeah.
October 22nd.
I don't know. Our management just like set it to somebody else, and we were like, "Huh? Wait, which song?
Wait, when?
You guys didn't get to decide?
I mean, we will. Yeah. It was, you know, it's one of those little smooth moves. You know how they do.
Are you guys a democracy in Lumbella?
Maybe. Sometimes somebody, some other one will be bullish or something like that. I mean, I think we are.
We all have the right to be bullish.
Yeah. But everybody takes a role, and I think we found a way to like give each other the space to do it when they have the idea. At least that's when we're working at our best. But yeah, you gotta let yourself like go, like get yourself underwater and try something, and then you always pull it back, you know. You can always pull it back, but like if you're not like afraid you're gonna drown, I don't think you can create anything worth listening to, honestly.
Is there something on this new record that is a departure from?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We wrote most of the record. Yeah, we wrote most of the record on piano.
Mm.
Like we just. We're trying some different things, and then we bring in other instruments and stuff like that.
Are you playing keys on it?
I just play on like one song because I'm not. I can do it live, but once you start having, like a chicken playing. But Kaneen's husband is a great piano player.
Mm. He's a beautiful player.
And then Aaron was great. And then Thomas. And then it's like what none of us could do, Thomas could do. So it's it's like a Atlanta Braves in the '90s, just a bench for days.
Mm.
Is there anything on this new record that speaks to our political times?
Yeah.
Is there any message songs?
Yeah.
There's a couple. Do you want to talk about illegal immigrant?
I'd rather talk about just enough to get by, just because.
Oh, it's funny. Yeah, the kind of material. Now that I'm thinking about it, we have a lot of songs that speak to the times, rather than just kind of like relationship songs.
I think it's a dumb question, because how could you not? But, you know, I think there is a choice that a lot of us are making right now of not hiding behind the poetry veils, you know, starting to kind of, like, I have to kind of start to say something, you know, with our whatever limited platform.
Well, I think it's important not to, like, to try to tell a story and to find empathy and not to say, you're wrong. You're you can't. That's not how you change minds.
Bringing,
you have conversations.
Bringing people into the story.
Start a conversation.
They feel.
Yeah.
Well, we tried to put ourselves in other people's stories on this record, which was a new thing for us. Usually, we've been like a very like inner. What's my inner demons?
Do you co-write
kind
of
thing?
Three of you, or do you
sometimes
start with a song?
And then sometimes no. So, but with this record, we really. Individually and together had like specific stories. One of those is Just Enough to Get By. We can talk about that. Another one is Legal Immigrant. We can talk about that. I'll let you guys.
Yeah, Just Enough to Get By is a song that was a line Brian had and like a little melody that had always just planted in my brain. So I wrote a song to it that's just about someone super close to me who had gone through a terrible trauma. And then, because of the circumstances, kind of had to keep it under wraps for, like, decades. Mm. And I felt like there's so much that goes into when you hide something like that. Self-preservation. And also just not wanting to make other people feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Because if it's, like, a trauma with lasting effects, you don't want people to just see that when they talk to you.
Mm.
Like, so that song to me was kind of about the different voices that are playing in your head that are just like, you just gotta like get through this. And it's kind of like a life half lived when you're just living in the shadow of this trauma and you can't really tell people about it.
Mm.
And kind of the lengths you'll go to protect people from your own pain
and
what that does to you over time. But yeah, it's kind of an upbeat song though.
Yeah. It is amazing how, I mean, just within the last decade, if not less, you know, where women's stories especially are now, like, we have to believe them, whereas before we didn't have to believe them or something, you know?
Yeah, you can't really buy into the hysterical
female. I'd rather
female.
Err on the first side, you know, like, instead of, like...
Just in general, the women in my life usually remember things better than the men in my life.
I mean, did you see even last week? It sounds like you're like a New York Times guy. Did you see the story that they're doing on like men that have been sexually abused in the army?
Yeah,
and it's like,
yeah, that's
insane.
That's
they're
way
just now coming out. And it's just like to imagine that people have built these abilities to compartmentalize. Things in their mind to stay sane or afloat for years, for decades. I'm excited that the times that we're in right now, that people are like, you know what? I think it's safe now. I'm going to let myself say this out loud. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it still requires so much bravery.
Oh, my. Yeah.
It's insane.
So much bravery.
I cannot imagine.
What was the song that you wanted to talk about?
It's a song that it's called Illegal Immigrant that I wrote, Kaneen leads. It's just so beautiful coming from her perspective. But it was when there was child separation going on and the whole country was kind of in uproar. And I like, sometimes I get in the crazy brain and all that stuff. But I was listening to like NPR, like driving. And all of a sudden, like there was, had this story where this mom and daughter had been reconnected in New York. And the politicians were talking, you know, they were like saying how well they've done this. And I was like, anyway. And then she just took the mic and said something in Spanish. And then they told the story and said what she said. And she said, in the mic, I promise I'd find you wherever you are. Here I am. And I had to pull the car over because that's the story I want to hear. Like, I don't want to hear, because when you like, compartmentalize hundreds of thousands of people and try to say like so one thing is like we need to help them, and one side is like they're I'm not even gonna say what some people say because that's wrong. Like you demonize another, your neighbor.
Right.
But like, you want to hear the story in the middle of it of the one person, because once you get too high up, you can't see what's really going on. And
we also don't hear from the people themselves.
That's what I'm saying, because the politicians are talking, right? And it just floored me. And I was actually going to like a regular old Nashville write, and I was like torn. And they were like, "I'm not gonna write one of those songs right now." Mm. And I was, "Can you do this with me?" And they went with me, and we wrote this song. And I'm really proud of it, because it doesn't. It just gives you a perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can get mad. I don't understand about it, but like, what really you like? You want to hear stories like that, so I can like, my world can get bigger, not smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And the chorus says exactly what.
Yeah, you said. I didn't change any of the words. Mm-hmm. Like, it sounds kind of, you know, what is it, trite? Because it's like, "I promise I follow you wherever you are," mm-hmm, when you sing it. But if you know the story, like, that's the exact words she said to her daughter in the microphone.
I wonder if she'll ever hear it.
I wonder. I don't know. Because I don't know the names or I don't just place you hear it. But
super heavy. I think one other song that is, that my husband wrote for this record is called Dust Settles. And the chorus ends with the question, "How am I going to find you when the dust settles?" Mm-hmm. And he wrote it thinking a lot about personal conflict, but reflected in times like, I have a big family and we get in like crazy heated political debates because you have people from, but we love each other, so we can have these like kind of knockout, drag out things and then all have breakfast together the next morning. But it's kind of this question of like this huge divisive thing happened in our country and such terrible things were said and have been done and all these things. And how are we going to find each other? What's it going to be like when, and will the dust kind of ever settle? Like, are we ever going to be able to hear each other?
But I feel like that is the importance for me of music, is that it is the thing that everyone can agree on almost genetically. Like, you have to feel what you guys are singing, because there's, the harmonies that you guys do are, you know, eyes roll back in your head, transcendent harmonies at times, where, you know, I don't care what side of the aisle you're voted for, you're going to feel something, you know.
And that's what's
unless
so,
you're a sociopath, and then maybe
that's
not.
That's what's mysterious about music in general. It's like, why? Why do we feel something when we hear certain melodies?
But there's like evidence, you know, going back to like the caves in France and Germany, that they were making instruments like when they didn't even have the ability to have language. You know, they were already having to express themselves in music.
And that's, you know? I mean, that's what is so exciting to me about having the opportunity to just like create music specifically, is you feel like you're just like a part of some like timeless language that transcends.
And I think it is a force for good, even though it may feel like we're doing something extraneous or not, you know, not so, you know, curing cancer, but I think it is something that is such a part of our lives for the good. You know?
It's such a privilege to be a part of somebody's, like, I'm gonna go out and forget my day. Like, I think that's such a, for me, it just makes me so humble that that's like what somebody wants to do. Like, forget all like whatever we're on a stage and all that stuff. They're just like, you know what? This is just our time that we're gonna go out with our friends and share something together. And, yeah,
I'm excited too. We did this thing at the very end. Brian and I, both of our grandfathers passed away this year, and we have a song called Feel You Dancing, and it's just like kind of a letter to them kind of thing. And at the very last minute when we turned in the masters, I had this like Hail Mary thing where I was like, "Hey, my grandmother at my grandpa's funeral randomly went up and played this beautiful hymn medley like right before they rolled him away." And I got a recording of it, and it's now the intro, the interlude, and the outro on the record, and it's the actual recording of her playing at the funeral. So I'm really excited about that.
It's awesome. Well, this has been really fun, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming
thanks,
in.
Man.
This was really awesome. And I'm looking forward to Half Moon Light.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to hear the new record. While it's still a little bit soon to share new music from their upcoming record, Half Moon Light, I did want to share a song from their beautiful EP from 2018, The Restless. I totally missed this coming out, by the way. That goes to show that even if you're a big fan, there's so much music coming your way that you can totally lose it in the shuffle. There's an acoustic version of Cold As It Is that, man, it feels like you're in church with these guys. I don't know what the religion is, but I want to be a part of it. So here it is, Cold As It Is. You have it, the Three Musketeers of the Lone Bellow. You can go to thelonebellow.com for their music and their tour dates. They'll be playing in London and in Glasgow early next year. That is when their new record, Half Moon Light, will be coming out. You heard it here first, folks. That is produced by the wonderful Aaron Desner of The National. I mentioned that wonderful EP, The Restless, that came in 2018, and if you go to thebluegrasssituation.com, you can see a beautiful video of The Restless. And if you go back a year earlier, you can hear The Lone Bellow talking to Kelly McCartney for an episode of Hangin' and Sangin'. It's awesome. You should check it out. If you happen to be curious about what other music podcasts I'm listening to right now, I just got into the Americana podcast hosted by the wonderful Robert Earl Keen. There's an episode that I really loved where he talks to BJ Barnum of the band American Aquarium. Man, there's this part of the story that BJ tells about
writing a song on the spot at a show when he sees his ex-girlfriend making out with her new boyfriend in the front row. I can't stop thinking about it. It's so funny. Check that out, the Americana podcast. Starting tomorrow, I will be heading to Europe with my game Dust Bowl Revival. The show on the road will indeed be on the road for a month and a half straight. We're going to Germany and Belgium and Sweden and the Netherlands and Spain and the UK. You know what? If you have bands or artists across the pond that you think that I should seek out and interview, drop me a line on Instagram. It's at the Show on the Road podcast. The Show on the Road is hosted by me, Zach Lupitan, and produced by the handsome Hawaiian Chris Jacobs with support from the Bluegrass Situation team. If you love The Show on the Road, please leave us a review or rating over at itunes.com/showontheroad. Tell your friends, and also be sure to check out BGS's ever-growing collection of podcasts up right now on the bluegrasssituation.com. The Show on the Road is a part of the BGS Podcast Network. This is Zach Lupitan. See you on the trail.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hayden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Minahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!